Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to Bridge the Atlantic, where we get to know the people behind the creative industries. We're your hosts, music web designer Ross Barber, owner of Electric Kiwi, where we create awesome custom websites for bands, artists, and musicians.
And I'm award-winning singer-songwriter, actor, and indie filmmaker, Marcia Novelli.
Joining us this week is multi-award-winning actress, producer, and best-selling author, Ileana Douglas. With over 100 acting credits to her name, Ileana can be seen in movies including Goodfellas, Cape Fear, Ghost World, and The Green. She's also had recurring and guest star roles on 6 Feet Under, Entourage, Marin, Frasier, Seinfeld, and many more. Her pioneering branded web series for IKEA, Easy to Assemble, has been downloaded over 40 million times and has been called the most successful branded show of all time by Adweek.
Only 40 million, that's all. In addition to her acting work, she has also hosted Trailblazing Woman on TCM and is a producer and co-star in the web series The Skinny for Jill Soloway's online network Wifey.tv. We're excited to learn more about her career in the entertainment business and to hear about her new book, I Blame Dennis Hopper. Hi, Ileana.
Hi. Hello.
Welcome to the show. To this weird, crazy thing that we do here.
No, I can't wait. I'm ready.
All right. Well, Ross, should we start off the way we always start off right away?
Yeah, we like to start things off really, really awkward.
Okay.
And we want you to tell us 3 things about yourself that everyone should know.
3 things that everybody should know. I was raised Italian Catholic. My grandfather is Melvin Douglas. And I named my dog Chauncey Gardner after a character in Being There.
I love it. You've had a wildly successful and illustrious career. So what would you attribute your success to?
Well, probably just from reading the book and having so many book readings. One of the most fun things for me has been to have other people read aloud from the book. And I remember at one point, this actor, Robert Patrick, was reading aloud at an event and he kept stopping and laughing and going, "Oh my God, did this actually happen?" And I always, I think that, you know, I've had a tremendous amount of luck, but I've also had a tremendous amount of perseverance. I just never, you know, believe in the word no. So I just keep going, really much to the dismay of everybody around me. But sometimes a little AD, sometimes a little learning disability maybe can help you, because I don't hear the word no. I just think, what they mean by that is that I'm still in the picture.
Right.
So a little bit of delusion maybe has taken me a long way.
But I think you need that. And, you know, how important do you think perseverance is? I know that's kind of a silly question in a way, but, you know, there's so many people that try to pursue things in life and give up, you know, and so often just before something takes light. You know, so, you know, for anyone, for our audience right now, who's an aspiring actor, you know, trying to see even a percentage of the success you've seen, what sort of advice would you give them?
Well, I give two really solid pieces of advice. You never should take anything personally. That's number one, you know, because especially in show business, people yell at you a lot, or they're cross or short-tempered, and you know, you can't take it personally. You really can't think it's because of you. And then the other thing is, I always tell people is to, which they're always very resistant to do, is I say, work for free. You know, go be an intern somewhere, work for free. Because oftentimes, you know, by working, some of the best jobs I got early in my career were not as an actor, as I write in my book. It was, you know, working for a film publicist. But while all my other friends were doing, you know, waiters jobs, I was basically like a very low paid intern. But in that environment, I was able to be around a lot of other filmmakers. So I always tell people, you know, go to Craigslist. They have like film crews, sign up to be on a film crew. And people always look at me in shock, like, well, I don't, what? You mean be a runner, go get coffee?
And yeah, like, yes, sure, why not?
You're on a movie set.
Yeah.
That's where you want to be. So that's what I always tell people to do, and they look at me in horror. I'm not quite sure why.
You know what? I love that you said, I don't know about you, Ross. I just love that she says that, because for me, that says no ego. You know, that says you're willing to work and you just want to be in that industry. Obviously, you have a goal in mind, but you want to, you're there.
Yeah. Well, that's how I've always felt about my career is that I of course, I always wanted to be an actor,
sure,
but I always wanted to be a writer, but I just wanted to be in show business. If I'm somewhere near or around show business, I feel happy. It's better than, you know, working in a toll booth. So it's all.
and when you're on set, even if you're a runner, I mean, you don't know who you're going to connect with, like,
yes,
naturally, rather than being in a restaurant.
Yes, that's
the cliche, right?
Yeah, that's what I always, you know, and again, nothing against anybody who wants to go be a waiter, but as I said, early in my career, I just sacrificed money for being around important people. And the thing is, you know, when you're getting someone coffee, you'd be amazed at the conversations that you overhear, and then you have the ability to kind of stick your nose in and say, you know, I know you mentioned the, you know, I know you were talking about Egypt.
I was eavesdropping.
But, you know, and sometimes people tell you to mind your own business.
Right,
and
right.
Then that's where my other piece of advice, you know, don't take it personally.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
You know, it's a fine line between being pushy. The thing I tell people not to do is, you know, write someone a letter like me or other, you know, will you be my mentor?
Mm-hmm.
Can I pick your brain? I always think that's like, I have so little of my brain left. don't pick at it. But if somebody comes to me, like I'm doing a movie and they say, you know, I'd like to, you know, work as an intern on your show, or then those kind of things really, I'm really impressed by that. And I really, really gets people, I think, in the arena where creativity is happening.
I love that.
Yeah.
I love it.
Definitely.
Yeah.
That's all amazing advice. And I really hope that people take that on board and do something with it. Because,
I'm listening.
Stop picking my brain.
Yeah, Ross.
So I'd love to talk a little bit about your book.
Yes.
I Blame Dennis Hopper. So it's a memoir framed by movies.
Yes.
I suppose would be the best way to describe it. We'd love our viewers and listeners to check it out, but I was wondering if you could maybe share one of your favorite stories from the book as a sneak peek for everyone.
Well, the title of the book, I Blame Dennis Hopper, comes from the fact that, you know, my whole family is very much a movie-going family. My grandfather was Melvin Douglas, the 2-time Academy Award-winning actor. And my parents, when they were, you know, courting, but living in New York, they used to always go see movies and go to the revival houses. And when they saw the movie Easy Rider in 1969, it just kind of, you know, like many other people in the generation, it's kind of changed their life, and they decided to, you know, go a completely different way and started, they had a commune called The Studio, and it was suddenly our whole lives were thrust into being hippies. And my father started, you know, emulating the values of Dennis Hopper and the movie Easy Rider, and that plummeted us pretty quickly into poverty. It was supposed to be this great dream, you know, it was the 60s. And
oh gosh.
It turned my life into this, you know, direction that there was never any money. There was certainly never any money to go to college. So really, becoming an actor for me, it just was like, well, what other thing was I going to do except become an actor? And I grew up, luckily for me, I was successful. And then, you know, one day I get this call that, of course, I'm going to be in a movie with Dennis Hopper playing my father figure type lover. And that's where I was like, well, you know, your whole life is like a movie. How often do you get a chance to meet the person that has literally changed your life? And I had this epiphany, you know, while working with Dennis Hopper, that in a sense, you know, people that are my age were all children of Dennis Hopper. Certainly for beginning the independent film movement in 1969, changing the way movies were made and distributed, but also in the ability that one movie, you know, this anti-establishment, I mean, it predicted the rise of the hippie culture and the anti-establishment, anti-war feeling in America. And movies these days, you know, we may go to a movie and we may love Star Wars, but, you know, we're not going to go move to a planet far, far away. And movies had that impact on people. And I felt with my work now, working with Turner Classic Movies, classic film, we're almost getting away from how important it was to go to the movies. I mean, movies were really the, you know, as you were saying, told the story of my life. And so that is, that's basically the first story is about that. And it goes kind of in order, but each story is how a movie or a movie star profoundly affected my life. In some ways, I don't even, you know the person. And in one story in particular, which is one of my favorite stories, is how I imitated Liza Minnelli to get into a theater group. And it ended up being my first sort of professional gig when I was 15. And that's the thing is, like, we need... And sure enough, many years later, I got to meet Liza Minnelli. So it's always a little surreal for me. Each one of these stories has a kind of crazy, well, this is like a movie.
No kidding. It seems to really come around for you. And
yes,
it's almost like you said, like a film, like it's not reality. Like that's not supposed to happen type thing.
Well, it's, you know, and like I said, there's been posters of people on my wall, and then I'm meeting those people. Yeah. And I often, you know, I wonder, is everybody's life a movie or is it just mine? Like, right. I feel everybody's life is a movie, but mine sometimes feels particularly cinematic. I see things in pictures anyway.
Right.
So it all seems like a movie. I always have like a great soundtrack underneath everything I'm doing, you know?
Well, I think Russ, you and I can sort of agree with that to a point. Even with this show, we've been able to interview people like yourself that we admire and then go on to actually have relationships with down the road. And it's very interesting. It's surreal. But at the end of the day, people are people.
Yes.
And you're doing what you're passionate about. And it just so happens to reach a large audience. So, you know, getting to actually work with those people, it probably blows your mind at first, but then you probably are just so, I don't want to say used to it, but you start to realize that people are people.
Well, it's also, you know, it's a very, you know, our society right now is very, it's very cynical.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I love about working with Turner is that there's such a great appreciation for someone, whether they only were in one movie that affected us or whether they have a, you know, a whole body of work.
Mm-hmm.
And being around, you know, movie fans and movie lovers they aren't fickle, you know, they love their classic film stars. And so many times early in your career, you know, you want to be, of course, you want to be, you know, success, you know, in a successful film, but things, you know, there are peaks and valleys. And even a movie like Easy Rider, when I saw Easy Rider, I saw it like on television, you know, I think when I was in high school, very cut up version of it. And I was thought, this is the movie? This is the movie my parents threw everything away for? And it didn't make any sense to me. And then I started watching it a few years ago, and I thought, wow, this movie has such a resonance for me almost, you know, now more than ever, because the message of the movie is, you know, these two hippie bikers, you know, they're on this road trip, and they're looking, you know, through what is like a broken America and talking about freedom. And now we no longer even have the ability to be free. Like, that's gone. So there is no more freedom. I mean, we're here for the long, we're here until the second Big Bang, I have a feeling. So
did you learn anything different about yourself by writing this book? Because this, you know, writing a book about your life kind of, I don't know, I feel like it would give you such insight or maybe confuse you more.
No, I tell everyone they should, even if not asked, everyone should write a book about your life.
Why's
because
that?
So many, well, you learn, you know, you, for me, it's always very, as an actor, of course, you're like, who am I? You know, why am I here? What am I, you know, am I doing anything to help anyone? And so you discover a lot about who you are and, you know, what you're made of and your roots. So many times, like, again, it's a little like George Bailey. You don't, you're like, oh, I guess I actually did accomplish something. You know, you don't, you never think that, you know, you just, you know, you were running and running and running. And then when you write a book and you see all these pictures, you're like, wow, I'm exhausted. I did all that, you know? And so I look back on decisions I made, like to, you know, to do the movie Alive, because part of the reason I did the movie was I, you know, this idea that we were going to live on a mountain and go to the set in a helicopter. And I was, I thought, you know, well, I'm, this is early in my career. What if I never have that opportunity again? Mm-hmm. And sure enough, that, like, I think, oh my God, thank God I did that movie, because I learned so much from doing that movie and the excitement of, you know, shooting on a mountain and how challenging it was. But sometimes, like, you just got to go for it. And I, again, I look back on writing some of these stories that I thought, well, who's going to be interested in Rudy Valley or Roddy McDowell? And sometimes those have been the stories for people that have been the most poignant, because they're learning about these people and how they impacted, you know, my life. And I think that each, that, you know, that's what I've been told, that whether or not it's movies, for some people it's music, but, you know, these people, these larger than life artists also get us through these tough times, you know. Mm-hmm. And every time that I met one of these people, I, you know, it was like a bell went off in my head, and I felt it was important to kind of to tell their story. It keeps them alive, not only in the movies, but what they were like personally and how they impacted my life.
That's beautiful. Yeah. You know, would you say that it is so important to just say yes?
Mm. Definitely. I mean, I do that all the time. It's like, mm-hmm. you'd be amazed how much energy that, you know, by just saying, you know, by just spending the whole day and going, yes.
Sure. What do you have to lose?
You know, you meet a lot of people that way, if that's what you want. You know, right. That was like, I always want, that's always like my thing, is I want to, you know, when I'm 95, just be like, wow, I did a lot. I, you know, I have no regrets. I always want to have no regrets. So far, so good. And one of the really rewarding things is so many people that have read the book, because it's a roadmap of movies. Also, I mean, there That's must cool. be like 100 movie references. In fact, some people have put together for me, like, you know, movies, just the movies that I mentioned. And then they're watching all the films that I mentioned. And then they, you know, they reach out to me, and that's really exciting too. Just to get to have other people talk, you know, like read about Peter Fonda and then go watch all of his movies, or Rudy Valley or Roddy McDowell, all these people that, you know, that made these fantastic films.
I feel like that's so generous of you too, because like your book sounds the opposite of most autobiographies, which is usually pure narcissism. And it's not like your book is almost about everyone else and just how that, it's from what I can see, has affected you and made you the person you are. And that's so giving, that's so generous, which kind of seems to have a parallel between you as an actress and being a very generous actress that works well with other actors.
Yeah, well, I had absolutely no desire writing a book about, you know, me and my career. I've read a lot. I love reading celebrity autobiographies, but it's not interesting to me. And I'm always been, like, my whole life, as I said, I've been an observer, and I like to observe people. And I feel that that's, you know, that the whatever writing gift I have is to be in the movie as I write, like an insider and outsider, and that I'm in the film, but I often have felt like I'm outside the film studying the people. Okay. And again, like in one of the chapters that I wrote about with Richard Dreyfuss, you know, he just, here is an example of somebody, I watched him as a kid, and then I had an opportunity to work with him, and then, you know, and then with Turner, with TCM, interview him. And so it's a slightly different perspective from like a classic interviewer. It's almost like I'm acting in a scene with them when I'm interviewing them and when I'm writing about them. I'm writing from the perspective of being a movie fan, but then also having worked with them. And I try to bring something, again, to each person that I write about that is slightly unexpected. And that's always been I try to use the qualities that I have as an actor when you're acting in a scene with them to pick up little nuances about who they are, but then tell a story with them. And so, again, one of the stories in the book, it's called Me Doing Dreyfus Doing Tracy, which is based on me when I was in acting school, and whenever I would get in trouble, I would just be like, I'm just going to do Richard Dreyfus. I'm just going to do a Dreyfus here. And when I met Richard Dreyfus and I told him that, he said, that's funny because I used to always imitate Spencer Tracy. And I said, wait a minute. So I'm not even doing, I'm doing you doing Tracy?
That's amazing.
So, that to me was even, it's like one painter copying another painter to, you know, getting your style. And, you know, nobody knew I was doing Richard Dreyfus, but that's what gave me the confidence to kind of get through some rough spots until you kind of find your own thing that you want to do. Now, yeah. What's funny about the story is that, very much like with Dennis Hopper, then, oh, of course, one day I'm going to get cast in a movie with Richard Dreyfuss. And how is this going to work out? So I like to, you know, you were saying like writing about your career. It's like, you know, to me, that's not interesting. But as an actor, you know, you learn a lot of practical things of what's it like on set? Like, what can I expect? What happens when you get into trouble with a scene? How do you act a scene when you're on a mountain? You know, so all of these different scenarios as an actor, I try to write about from a more, you know, obviously funny because I'm funny, mm-hmm. but a more practical, you know, point of view.
Well, how do you approach it when you run into trouble in a scene? What do you do?
That's another chapter, you know, that I write about, which is called What's It Like to Work with Robert De Niro, which is my, my question, you know, wherever I go, like, what, you know, can I ask you what, you know, what's it like to work with? So I thought, okay, well, that's a very interesting question. So let me write an entire chapter. Like, I don't want to be flippant about it, you know, because you don't have time. You go, he's great. He's amazing. He's a genius. Right. But I thought, well, this will be really interesting. Let me write an entire chapter from an actor's point of view of what is it like to work with Robert De Niro. And it's really dedicated to acting. That's a real interesting, you know, and that is like when you get in trouble, when you get intimidated by somebody that's so larger than life. And we feel that in life too, you know? And so in that instance, it talks about like an epiphany that I had where I was going to have to remove him from the equation. Otherwise, I just would be acting with Robert De Niro. And that's something that's interesting and practical, probably can relate to other people that have been in that situation where you're meeting someone who's, you know, somewhat larger than life. Mm-hmm. And how do you take that person out of the equation? You know, that's a very good metaphor for life, and just do your job as an actor and forget about what anybody thinks or any of those things. So in that sense, it talks about, you know, an actor preparation. And I studied at the Neighborhood Playhouse, which is an incredible school started by Sanford Meisner. And Sanford Meisner was a great acting teacher, as was Stella Adler, who taught Marlon Brando. And then there was also Lee Strasberg, and they each had their different methods of acting, and each one offers very practical, interesting advice. And so that chapter tells a lot about, you know, acting technique. And you do find yourself oftentimes, as I write in the book, there's three or four examples of movies where you're really like, oh, I'm in trouble here. What am I going to do? And I, again, thought that would be something that was very interesting, that people have told me who've read the book, like that, oh, nobody ever writes about what it's actually like to be on the set, the physical, not here I am winning my Oscar, but what happens when, you know, the shot goes wrong and you have 20 minutes to shoot this. And so there's a lot of that kind of, sort of practical feeling as if you're on the set. And what's been great is that everybody who reads the book says, now I want to go back and watch the movie. So that to me is the most rewarding thing.
I can tell you, I cannot wait to read those. We haven't had a chance to read it yet, and we cannot wait to read those. I was excited to read it beforehand, but now you've just gotten me like really psyched to read your book. So well, good job.
My favorite thing is when my friends we've been doing these readings, you know, around town, and also I've been touring.
Right.
And the thing I keep, you know, I was in an interview and I said to someone, well, it's a very fast read. You'll read it at one sitting. And then they laughed, like, you're like, well, that's kind of conceited. And I said, no, that's what people keep telling me. They're like, I couldn't put it down. I because each one is a story. That's what's great about it. You don't have to, you can pick it up in the middle.
Kind of like a short story book.
Exactly.
Short story.
When I was a kid, I was obsessed with short story books.
Yeah.
J.D. Salinger.
Probably because of the ADD, right?
Yes.
Like,
yes.
I can relate to that. It's like, that's as much as I can handle now.
I was like, okay, right. I know I can write. And the idea that you can, that you could pick it up anywhere.
Yeah.
I'm like, I don't like being hemmed in. Like, I got to read the beginning and the end. I was like, you can read the last chapter. And
I love it.
You know, and it's great. You don't have to skip to the end because there is no end. There's 15 stories, and there's a lot more stories. Two of the stories ended up getting dropped out. So hopefully for book two, if everybody buys the book, then I'll write even more stories.
Ileana, are you ready for 20 questions?
I'm ready. Wait, I'm pouring my tea. Am I going to?
Okay, good. I have my tea too. Well, you know what? That works perfectly because the first question is coffee or tea?
Tea!
We all drink our tea.
Meat or veggies?
Oh, veggies.
Good. I'm vegan, so that makes me very happy.
I know. I'm a cheater. I'm a pescatarian. So
that's
I'm
okay.
Not,
that's a, not, okay. You're still better than Ross. Yeah. Still better than Ross that eats me.
Full blown carnivore here.
TV or Netflix?
Ooh. I guess TV. I'm going to classic TV. Yeah,
going to old school. Okay.
Yeah.
Twitter or Facebook?
Ooh, I guess Facebook. Facebook.
Yoga or yogurt?
Oh, yogurt. Yeah.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah. Does that disappoint you?
Yeah, because you're from Los Angeles. I thought yoga. I'm stereotyping now. Sorry.
Yes.
Theater or film?
Oh, film. I'm a filmie. Yeah.
Connecticut or California?
shoot. That's a tough one. Oh my God. They both begin with C. I'm going to go California because that's the center of the movie business.
We ask the tough questions here on Bridge the Atlantic.
Yes. We do.
They're going to get tougher.
Okay.
Education or experience?
Oh, definitely experience. Definitely.
Thank God. We're actually asking you this question. Justin Bieber or Justin Timberlake? What are we doing here? Why have we been asking this? Russ, this is just embarrassing.
Oh my God. Justin Bieber or Justin Timberlake? It's actually the hardest question. I'm going to go with Justin Timberlake.
Thank you. Whew.
Yeah, he makes movies. He was very good in The Social Network.
He was actually. Yeah, he was. Canada or Scotland?
Oh, that's brutal. Brutal.
You're going to offend one of us.
God, that is so, all right. I'm going to have to go Canada because I've made movies there. But I love Scotland. Yeah. Do you want me to take up my plaid? I'll take up my plaid blanket that I got.
Oh, Roz is wearing plaid today.
When I was at the Edinburgh Festival, that was like my big joke was like, I kept everywhere I went. I was like, is there a store that maybe sells plaid? I don't know. I'm having a, if anybody knows, could I get a scotch? Is there any scotch that I get? Because wherever you go, like down the street, you're like, why do I need plaid underwear? And scotch. I need to go to another scotch.
Those two go really well together. Plaid underwear and scotch.
Well, that's all I did. I went to the
every imagining museum. Really crazy notes nights.
Yeah. Oh, it was cold though.
Yeah.
So cold. It's cold. But I loved
ventriloquism or magic. Sorry, I jumped in there. Sorry.
Oh, that's Tori. Love both. I'm going to go with magic. I love magic.
Right. Comedy or drama?
Oh, comedy.
Tina Fey or Amy Poehler?
Brutal. I'm going to go with Amy Poehler because she was my boss.
Yeah, there you go. That's a smart move. I was going to say, we're going to get her into trouble here, Roz. Jeez.
Yeah.
I know. Yeah. Hopefully none of these will. So, Marlon Brando or Liza Minnelli?
Ah, brutal. I'm going with Marlon Brando.
Yeah. This is one of our special questions, but Michael Jackson or Michael Bolton with the hand power grab right here.
I guess you got to go with Michael Jackson. Classic moonwalk.
Yeah. But you know, Michael Bolton does have the power grab. Let's not forget that. And he ruled the early 90s with those power ballads. Let's not forget.
Yes. And he was he was on Dancing with the Stars, I think.
Is he really?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. We want to get on the show.
Let us not forget that. Yes.
Lest we forget.
Celine Dion or Marilyn Manson?
Oh, Celine Dion, definitely. Yeah.
What a voice, huh?
Yeah. She's got a great, and you know, she will go on.
Absolutely. Ricky Gervais or Ricky Martin?
Oh, that's sad. I guess Ricky Gervais. I mean, he brought us The Office and Extras and so many wonderful.
Why is it sad?
Because I like them both. It's, you know. I don't want to be that I'm anti-Ricky. I'm just
picking
the other Ricky because he's
he's
in my tribe. He's in my comic tribe.
And he doesn't adhere to the kind of, I don't know, he just stands outside of the industry in a way and just doesn't care, or at least appears to not care. Because he doesn't need it, because he's got his own, well, he does. He's got his own kind of thing going, so, you know.
Maybe he doesn't care. Maybe you're right.
Maybe, who knows?
Call him and ask him.
If you've got his number, we'll happily take it. That's all.
Don't have his number. He doesn't call me. I don't understand.
Gervais, Jesus. Well, yes. Whale? Talk to him.
Yeah, whale or kale?
Oh, whale, definitely. I'm off the kale. There's too much kale. What's so great about kale?
Ileana, you were the first person to answer that so quickly and not question. Most people look at us like, I don't get it. Whale or kale? We're like, it rhymes. We're like, that's all. It's just rhymes. That's what we're doing here. We're rhyming. Bette Midler or the Riddler?
Ooh, Bette Midler.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. Down and Out in Beverly Hills. Great Bette Midler performance.
She's awesome.
Now, this may be the toughest question, maybe the easiest question.
Okay.
Either way, we'll be insulted? Someone?
Yeah, either way, one of us is going to end up crying.
Oh, no! So
it's Ross or Marcio.
That's not fair!
Dun, 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 I'm also an actor. Do, 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 do.
I have a cute dog.
He's holding a dog!
Seinfeld's one of my favorite shows of all time.
And I loved you in 6 feet Under.
Look at us groveling. Oh my God. Embarrassing. Shamelessly too, eh?
Oh, has anyone not answered that? I can't do it. I can't do it. It's okay. Like Sophie's Choice. Come on.
Wow. I know. I'm really complimented that you just compared it to that. Wow.
I can't. That's too, it's too cruel. I can't. It was hard enough to do Canada, Scotland. I refuse to end. If this interview must end over this question, so be it. So be it.
Oh my gosh. Well, it won't end. It'll end soon. But before we do end, I want to ask you, what's the most important skill for an actor, both as a as a craft and from a business standpoint, what's the most important skill an actor should have?
Probably, I mean, flexibility, because again, you know, you find yourself in so many situations where you want to be resistant. And, you know, I mean, just to give you an example, you know, when you're on movies, you know, when you're making movies, it's not like you're in acting school. It's not perfectly ordered. And so sometimes, you know, they may come to you and say, listen, we have an issue and it would be save us $10,000 if we do your big, you know, crying scene tonight. And, you know, you have to go, you can't go, no, I was planning it tomorrow. And it's
yeah, I'm not prepared. Or, yeah.
You know, you just have to go, yeah, I can do it. You know, and I think that that's part of being, you know, we use this broad term being a professional, but I think that that's what being a pro is that, you know, you're low maintenance, but it's the underneath is just a flexibility in everything. And, you know, you prepare for something, but again, when you get to the set, you have to be flexible and adapt. And so many times in life, you know, even in my writing the book, I'm very open. Like, you may have an idea of what it's going to be, but I always change. Sometimes people get frustrated with me because I go, you know what this really is? And I sort of change what I'm doing organically as I go on, and they're not flexible.
Oh, really?
But I like flexibility. You know, sometimes you have definitive ideas, like when I'm directing, I'm like, no, it's got to be this. But sometimes, yeah, again, you have to have flexibility. If an actor is not interpreting something that you're doing, you have to have flexibility that it's either not working or you're not explaining it right or something like that. So that would be, I mentioned five words, but underneath it, it's all flexibility.
And being prepared for the unprepared, would you say?
Yes, definitely. But in it, but you know, again, and then the other, it's such a broad term, but like having a sense of humor about it, it's right. Like, you know, it's no big deal. I always right. Tell everybody to fail a lot, like before. You
okay,
know,
well, I've already done that.
Yeah. Right? But it's like, but that's because once you fail, that's that. You know, usually underneath everything is like, we have this tremendous fear of failure. But the thing is, once you fail, you know, like it's when you're learning how to do something and you fall, mm-hmm. right? Once you fall, you go, oh, okay, I fell. I look like an idiot. And then, but let me get up. You know, the world, unfortunately, right now, as Mike Tyson learned, once you fall in public, you know, they're going to show that 8,000 times mm-hmm. to kind of make fun of you. So in your private life, in your rehearsal life, you know, fail. I always tell people, like, you know, paint really bad pictures, do really bad Shakespeare, like do everything and fail. And you know what I mean? You find out that way. It's like, you got to do a lot of things and to find out what you are good at. You know, people don't want to, I'm a huge proponent of singing, of public singing. And people will say, well, I don't have a very good voice. And it's like, does it really matter? It's like, you know, so singing in groups is good. I think it builds your confidence. But you know, do all of that in the privacy of your home, you know. You know, and again, painting a picture is a good example of, you know, you reach a point where you're like, I've ruined it. It's horrible. And then you just want to throw it away. But it's like, if you don't give up, if you go beyond that point, you know, where you're like, all right, I fucked up. I put too much black there, but let me go beyond that. And usually then it's like, it turns into something. But so many times I find, and I don't know if it's the way people were raised, once we have a little twinge of failure, we just want to like give up. And I always think it's better to go beyond the failing part. You can really achieve something interesting.
You're so inspiring. I love this. Yeah. You were just like, I love it. I know if I'm talking to you and I'm feeling this way, I just know our audience is going to love this because this is such truth. You're just speaking such truth, and coming from you, that it just means so much. So I think everyone needs to go to IlianaDouglas.com. And on Twitter, you are Iliana Rama.
Yes. On Twitter, I'm Iliana Rama. I'm Instagram, Iliana Rama. And Facebook, I'm Iliana Douglas. We also have an I Blame Dennis Hopper Facebook page. It. And people can check out where I'm going to be going next. I'm going up to San Francisco, and then I'm going to be in Taos. I'll be in.
Come to Toronto.
Oh, I would love to. I would love to. We got to get somebody to bring me up there. I love Toronto.
We could talk about that. I would love to talk about that. Do it.
Yes, for sure. Come over here.
I would love it.
And as for me, I'm working on my second solo album, and you can hear my music at marcinavalli.com. I recently released my award-winning documentary, Walking Proof, which chronicles the making of my debut solo album, which you can watch for free at marcinavalli.com/walkingproof. Make sure to follow me on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Spotify, all those fun places, which are all /marcinavalli.
And I'm working on websites for various artists at the moment, and I'm also in the early stages of writing my first book. You can check out my work at electrickiwi.co.uk. You'll find me on Twitter and Instagram as Electric Kiwi, and on Facebook, Electric Kiwi Design.
This episode was brought to you by Chris Keaton, Alyssa Parma, Buck Naked Soap Company, and Social Surge. All links are in the show notes, so make sure to check them out.
And if you'd like to sponsor the show, visit patreon.com/bridgetheatlantic.
Iliana, honestly, this has just been, I could listen to you for, like, I think we need to do like 5-part episodes of this or something like that. I could just listen to you again.
Like,
how's
it going?
Well, you know what's funny? I actually have been listening to Iliana all day.
Oh, no,
because
kidding.
I've listened to pretty much every single podcast interview you've done today as research. But I just love listening to you talk. I love hearing your stories. And I know that, you know, people watching, listening to this are definitely going to take a lot away from everything you've shared. So.
Yeah,
thank you.
I love your positive energy. Yeah, you just have such a great vibe and a positive energy. And thank you so much. Please do come back. We want you to come back on, all right?
I would love it. Yeah, as I continue on my journey.
One last thing, I challenge our audience to draw the worst picture you can draw just out of pure excitement and expression, and post that either on our Twitter, Facebook, and tag all of us in it, and we can have a good laugh, and we'll all do one ourselves and share it with all of you. I think it'll be a lot of fun.
It's so liberating. Just like the worst, stupidest. You know, you do things when you're a kid. I mean, I use this example with a painting because you walk into someone's house and you're like, wow, that is an amazing, where did you buy that contemporary art? And it's like, my 5-year-old did that. You know, it's always like, and then we reach this point where our brains get involved, and then it's like, it's stick figures and then, you know, so.
So postmodern.
I know. No, I look at things in my mom's house. I'm like, I was so good when I was 7. What happened?
Thanks for listening to this week's episode of Bridge the Atlantic. If you like what you heard, please subscribe and leave a rating and review on iTunes.
You can also find us on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, so connect with us on there and let us know what you think of the show.
Thanks for being awesome, and we'll see you next week.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.